This episode of Linoleum Knife is brought to you by Ovid, a streaming platform that you need. Why do you need it? I'm going to tell you why you need it.
Why, Dave?
Alonzo. First off, this month, an Ovid exclusive, an interview with Jacqueline Audrey. Now, do you know who she is?
Outside of this context, no.
Okay. One of France's first groundbreaking female filmmakers and the director behind the lesbian cult classic Olivia.
Oh.
Now, you ain't seen Olivia
yet. I need to.
But holy cow. Olivia is wild. Set in a very, very, very prim girls' academy.
Oh,
boarding school. In the, I think, the early 1950s?
Okay.
I'm blanking now. It's been 2 whole years since I saw it. Actually, no, wait. It was like 2019, I think.
Time means nothing.
But you know what I remember about the experience is that was the first time I got carded for being old.
You were so excited to get that senior discount.
Oh, God. I was out of my mind with happiness. They thought I was 62. I was like, no, I'm going to be 62 in like another 8 years or something. I can't do math, but close to that. And I shaved $3 off my ticket that day. It was fantastic.
Like
anyway, Olivia is amazing.
Okay.
Let's get back to the subject.
Please.
Olivia is amazing. If you are not up on all your historical queer cinema, get on it with this movie. And I'm stoked to watch this interview with her because I don't really know anything about her outside of this film. Then it gets even cooler.
Of course it does.
Light Years is the name of a Kylie Minogue album from 2000. But it is also the name,
yes,
currently, of a documentary about Argentine filmmaker Lucrecia Martel that we love.
Yes.
Linoleum Knife heartily endorses Lucrecia Martel.
Mm-hmm.
It is also a look inside the making of the astonishing movie Zama that came out a couple of years ago. Vanity Fair says that this film is a fearless, piercing piece of work.
Mm. I love a good documentary about filmmakers.
And that's what's happening on Ovid this month, along with like every other amazing thing that they have. So many cool documentaries and independent films, foreign language films, stuff that's, you know, deep cut.
Yes, indeed.
You need Ovid.
It is part of this complete breakfast.
Tell them what they get.
Hey, for listeners of this podcast, use the code Linoleum at checkout. Linoleum. Neither of us can say the name of our own show today.
Y'all don't even know. This was like the third take
because
I kept stumbling over the name of our own podcast.
10 years this week, everybody. Use the code Linoleum, Linoleum, for 50% off your first 3 months when you check out and subscribe at ovid.tv. That's O-V as in Victor, I-D as in David.tv. Get on it.
It doesn't trip off the tongue, really.
Ovid.tv does. Linoleum yes. Knife does not.
That's what I mean. Would you like some theme music?
I would love some theme music.
Here you go.
A podcast of the cinema.
I said it right that time.
You did.
Yeah. I'm Dave.
Yay, you.
I'm Dave White.
I'm Alonzo Duraldi.
We are film critics. He writes for The Wrap as their film reviews editor and currently their only film critic.
Steve Pond.
Steve Pond is doing it too.
Yes.
There. He's a full-timer on there at The Wrap.
Mm-hmm.
However, we freelancers, we're still unemployed.
And
thank God we got a podcast.
I'm hoping that that ship's going to turn around, but maybe. You know, there are larger forces.
Listen, I'm last
there.
In line anyway, as the spouse of the of the editors. Yeah, the only reason I even started writing for the rap was because you needed someone to last minute dive into a press screening of Sinister.
Yeah.
That was my first thing for them.
Was it?
Yeah. Hmm. And I said, no, you ask Big Boss first, if that's okay, because I don't want to be, this is not nepotism town over here. And, you know, then I'll tell you what, I earned my keep.
That's
go read
right.
my review of Vitalina Varela that came out earlier this year. It's the one thing I've written all dang year. I literally have written one film review in 2020.
Well, that's 2020 for you.
Yeah. So what else do you need to know about us if this is your first time listening?
I co-host some other shows.
What are those names?
Who Shot Ya, Breakfast All Day, and A Film and a Movie.
You should go listen to all of those. We are married to each other, and tomorrow's the election, and I want him to be humiliated.
Not me.
Him.
Him.
Him, not you.
Yes.
Him. That man.
Yes.
You know that man.
Well, we'll see what happens.
In the meantime, we're going to talk about the cinema.
Yes, we are.
The current cinema.
The current cinema.
There are 8 films to talk about. Here's what we're not going to do. Yeah.
Everybody thinks Hollywood's closed. Nope. There's movies coming out.
Here's what we're not going to do. We're not going to do another 2-hour episode. As much as y'all may have enjoyed that, by the end of it, I thought my throat was going to fall out of my neck.
How vivid.
We do talk a lot off the mic and on the mic.
Mm.
But man, 2 hours of just jawing on and on about...
Can the balloon juice.
Yeah. So let's crank
we'll
it up.
Let's just see where it goes.
Let's crank it up. I'll tell you what, 4 of these movies I haven't even seen.
Okay.
You saw 4 other films for Breakfast All Day... And for
the rap
to write, you wrote reviews for all of these things.
Almost.
Okay, almost. Do we want to start with the re-release and restoration of Bela Tarr's Damnation, or the Netflix rom-com about Christmas people, Holiday?
I suspect more people in general have or will see Holiday.
Oh, you don't know.
I'm not saying that's
who
how the
who do you think
world...
listens to this
I'm
show?
I'm not saying that's how the world should be. I meant just in general in the world.
We, listen, if we catered to the folks who only wanted Holiday, we'd have a much larger audience.
But we're not either oring it. We're going to talk about both. I'm just, I figured we'd start with Holiday and work
get it
out
on.
A way to...
Go.
All right.
So it's full of swears. I know this because I walked through the living room many times while Emma Roberts was saying all kinds of filthy things.
Yes, she does. So this is
and it seemed mildly amusing.
This is a holiday-themed rom-com that is on Netflix. Emma Roberts stars as a young woman who is tired of showing up at family functions as the only unmarried child because her mother, played by Frances Fisher, is constantly pushing her to get married because Frances Fisher puts it, you need somebody who is legally obligated to take you to chemo.
You know what? If you're not married, you stay single your whole life. Mm-hmm. You have friends. You have sex friends.
The movie is not
you
necessarily endorsing Frances Fisher's point of view. She just has that point of view.
All right.
Anyway, so we see a terrible Christmas that she has with her family. We see a terrible Christmas that golf pro Jackson, played by Luke Bracey, who was in the terrible Point Break remake, is having with a woman he's only just started dating, but who has already brought him home to her parents.
Yeah.
And when they run into each other in the returns line after Christmas, they compare notes on how much they hate being single during the holidays and the pressures that are upon them. And so they decide to make a pact that they will be each other's holiday for the year to come, that they will not be in a relationship, that they're not into each other, but that they will be companions and handy plus ones to sort of like not have to deal with all the usual garbage.
And then they do sex on each other.
Yes, but not until Halloween. It takes a while to get there.
Well, that's what, listen, that's when the sexy costumes come out.
So they, exactly. So it was a sexy Uncle Boonmi who can recall his sexy past lives.
Yeah.
And somebody suggests that on
Twitter.
That's
a good costume idea.
So, you know, it is, you know exactly where this is going. You know that they're going to like have really, you know, sort of coarse, biting, honest banter, but through that actually be relate to each other in a way they don't usually in relationships. And then they're going to fall for each other, and then they say they aren't going to fall each other, and they're going to have sex with each other, and they say they're not going to have sex with each other, and then they're going to break up, and then they're going to get together. Like, you've seen this movie. None of that is a surprise, but it's a rom-com, and it is very much owning that sense of it.
Yeah.
So what happens is, like, is it funny? Are they charming? And for me, the answer to both is yes.
As a person who did not watch the entire thing, but who just walked through the living room,
yes.
Again, I just said this, but it seems mildly amusing.
Yeah, I mean, I won't say that I laughed nonstop, but it's also, I laughed more than on those movies where I say, oh, I laughed enough. Like, I laughed enough plus. So that's, you know, that's in its favor. Emma Roberts and Luke Bracey, I thought, were charming together.
There's like oral sex jokes in the first 10 minutes.
Oh, yeah, 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 yeah. This is an R-rated movie.
It's dirty, yeah.
Let's be clear. and some fun B characters. Kristen Chenoweth plays a single aunt of Emma Roberts, who is always showing up with rando dates and revealing yet holiday-specific outfits. There is Manish Dayal, who was the lead in the The 500 foot journey, whatever the heck that movie was. The 100 foot journey.
Yeah.
And he was on Halt and Catch Fire. He plays the doctor next door that Francis Fisher is always trying to hook Emma Roberts up with. And when he first appeared, I thought, oh, we're not going to have like an Asian Baxter here, are we? But it's actually, he's, for one thing, really hot in this movie.
Okay.
And he is very, he has tons of agency.
Okay.
He is nobody's gag. So yeah, I don't want to oversell this movie. It's not great, but I was very amused. It is super up my alley. I mean, it's a charming rom-com with dirty jokes and holidays. So, you know, I'm in.
Where is it at?
It's on Netflix.
It's on Netflix, right now.
Now on Netflix.
Was it supposed to be in theaters ever? Probably not.
I don't think so, but I'm not sure.
Okay. So it's a step above a TV movie that you might find on, oh, say, another channel.
Well, look, Netflix is a player in the Christmas in the Christmas game.
All right. Okay.
They got a lot coming up.
Great. Can't wait.
Two original musicals.
Great. Can't wait.
No. I can't wait. Mm. Unironically.
I love Christmas.
I know.
Let's just be clear. Let's be clear.
Yes.
I've already had people on social media being like, oh, who needs a little cheering up with the Christmas? Blah, blah, blah. I'm like, no. No, stop. Don't. No. No. I love Christmas. Just get these infernal films away from me.
Yes, yes.
I know
yes.
what I'm watching.
We know. You've made that abundantly clear.
It seems I need to trot it out every year, though. Make it clear all over again. So people get off my back. Almost said a R-rated word there. Mm. Come Play.
Yes.
Film number one, over. Mm. Film number two, Come Play.
Yes.
Now, after watching this utterly confusing film, seems seemingly intentionally confusing film, I went and read an interview with the writer-director, Jacob Chase, I think is his name.
I believe so.
And his wife works with children on the autism spectrum, and for that reason, he did a lot of study, and he made his main character a child with autism. So I do not know, based on the film we watched, if anything about autism is right in this movie. It feels like it could have been a film about a kid without autism and been the same movie.
Yeah.
But he threw that in there, and so I don't have accurate information about whether this is a responsible film or an irresponsible film. But I'm going to err on the side of he says he did his homework.
We can only judge it on its merits as an actual horror movie that it wants to be.
And it ain't scary.
Not
it's
really.
It's for tweens. It's about a kid who is on the autism spectrum and is nonverbal.
Yes.
And he uses a phone app to speak for himself when he's talking to his teachers, other kids, his parents. His parents are played by
Gillian Jacobs and John Gallagher Jr.
The thank kid you for is pulling played, those names out of the air for me.
The kid is played by Aggie Robertson, who was the kid in Marriage Story. And he was also the younger son on The Plot Against America.
One day on his cell phone, a book called Misunderstood Monsters pops up. And it's about a monster named Larry that lives in the phone and wants to come play. And not just come play, but wants to come into the world of the kid. And this kid's character's name is Oliver. Thank you, IMDb. And he's the only one who, you know, can see this monster named Larry.
At first.
At first. And then eventually other people can see Larry as well. This is all set against the backdrop of his parents in the middle of a split for reasons that are never quite articulated. We don't understand really much of anything about the parents other than that they are fighting, not fighting, fighting, not fighting. The father leaves, comes back to help.
And even that they are or are not coping with the special needs of their son.
Well, they're clearly not. The characters are clearly not coping with the needs of their child because they keep saying really
inappropriate,
ridiculous things that me, I don't even know enough about autism to know, again, if this film is accurately depicting, you know, what might happen with a kid who is on the spectrum. Even I know enough to not say the things that the parents are saying to this kid.
Yeah.
You know, stuff, I'm not joking, lines like, why can't you just be normal for once? And I'm like, I'm sorry, he's what, 10? You should already know not to shame your child for this. What is your problem?
And it's not like the movie is endorsing them saying this.
No,
but
it's not. But it doesn't make a lot of sense.
No, it does not.
That's why I said earlier it seems intentionally confusing because we don't know if the parents are supposed to be on the kid's side or if they're just selfishly involved in their own stupid lives.
Yeah, it there are times where this is like when you watch a movie on commercial television and they've had to chop out like 20 minutes of it to fit in commercials, and you're like, okay, there's a scene missing here that would have explained what that was.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's...
So the monster becomes more involved in everyone's existence because no one has any choice, and they all have to sort of work together, parents, child, the friends who are bullying the child, they all have to sort of come together and sort this out.
Right.
I won't spoil it in case you decide you're going to watch it. But again, it's sort of a tween Halloween film that was released Friday.
Into theaters.
Into theaters exclusively.
Yeah.
So unless you have a drive-in nearby, do not go to a theater to see this. Mm. It'll be streaming in 6 weeks. I mean, there's no way it won't be.
Maybe even sooner because Focus is a division of Universal.
Right.
And Universal has that whole deal with AMC where they get like a shorter theatrical window and then AMC gets a cut of the eventual streaming, blah, 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 which I think is why these Focus movies are going the theatrical only route at first.
At first.
I just wrote a review of a film called...
I say 6 weeks because that seems like a reasonable window, and also it is the name of a very terrible Christmas movie starring Mary Tyler Moore and Dudley Moore.
Yes. Yeah. I just reviewed a movie called Let Him Go, which is, that is opening on Friday, and it's the same deal where it's hitting theaters first.
And so, you know, it's got some jump scares.
Yeah.
That's, you know, it made you... We watched it on the couch. You jumped on the couch.
I did. There's a spooky monster in a dark corner.
And credit where it's due, the spooky monster is good and a practical effect.
Yes.
It's a puppet.
Designed from people who like are either alums or currently in Jim Henson's Creature Shop. So that's always nice when somebody bothers to not just CG everything.
Right. So, you know.
It's pretty negligible.
Watch it if you feel like it. It's okay.
Yeah.
It's fine. It's fine.
If PG-13 horror is your jam, not that I would really recommend this as a horror movie per se, but I did find it interesting on other fronts. We got The Craft Legacy, which is a long-awaited sequel reboot. We don't really know until the end of the film what the deal is with this. But anyway, it is a follow-up, let us say, to the 90s cult hit. This time written and directed by Zoe Lister-Jones, who did a film a couple years ago that I really liked called Band-Aid, about a married couple who tried to work through their issues by forming a band and writing songs about their problems. And it starred Zoe Lister-Jones and Adam Pally. This time around, this movie stars an actress named Kaylee Spaney, who was in Bad Times at the El Royale, and she... I think played one of RBG's daughters in On the Basis of Sex. She's a young woman. Her mother is Michelle Monaghan, who is the therapist. And they are moving to, because Monaghan is moving in with another therapist, David Duchovny, who does a lot of like men's group reclaiming masculinity type work.
So you already know he's bad news.
Yeah, I mean, especially in a movie about...
bad news.
About teen girls with witch powers. She shows up at a new high school. There is a trio of kind of outcast girls played by Lovie Simone from Cela and the Spades, Gideon Adlon, and Zoe Luna. And they have been needing a fourth to complete their circle, their east, west, north, and south of Wiccan spellcraft. And Lily, the new girl, fits right in and is indeed the missing piece they've been looking for. They discover what powers they have. They put a spell on the school awful jock and turn him into like the most elevated version of himself. And they have some disputes within the group. But ultimately, this isn't a movie about like girls turning on each other, and this isn't a movie that punishes girls for being powerful.
No one has to bind anybody else on their own team.
There is some binding, but it gets undone.
Okay, well.
Anyway, this is, I think, I enjoyed this as a smart and funny high school movie.
Yeah.
You know, that has some like witchcraft elements in it.
Yeah.
And I like the fact that, you know, as much as I get why there's a cult for the original The Craft and there's a lot about it that's really cool, I do feel like it's a movie that sort of sets these characters up for punishment and like for hubris, you know, for their transgression of being powerful.
Yeah, but they still get to be themselves at the end.
Yeah, but they're stripped of all their powers at the end.
Okay.
Spoiler for a 26-year-old movie. You know, but it, like this movie felt more championing of these women coming into themselves and discovering their powers. And I think, you know, the craft was written and directed by men. This is written and directed by a woman. I think that makes a big difference. It is not particularly scary. And so, you know, I think the Halloween week release date might mislead people into what it is. But if you're thinking of it as like a cool high school film, I think it's really well put together. I like the performances a lot. The sort of quote-unquote woke version of the awful jock is kind of hilarious the way they do it, and surprisingly poignant as he kind of opens up about some of the reasons why he's such a jerk to everybody.
Right.
Actor named Nicholas Galitzine playing that role. I really enjoyed this. So, I it's kind of getting buried. There was I read an interesting article online about how Blumhouse, after, you know, kind of showing their ass on the whole, like, well, there aren't any women who want to direct horror movies.
Right.
They suddenly made...
Which is absolutely untrue.
Oh, insane. Like, dude, start listening to Switchblade Sisters. Right. There are plenty of women out there already making them or wanting to make them.
Yeah.
Anyway, this article talked about how, like, yeah, so now Blumhouse is starting to get these movies made with women directing, but then they don't give them the same push that they do to a lot of their other stuff. Like this movie went from being a theatrical release to being a streaming release with only about a month's notice. So right. They didn't really have enough time to do like a major press campaign for it, the way they would have if it had eventually opened theatrically, or even if they'd had more of a running time more running start to going to streaming. And they rattled off a couple of other titles that I'm not aware of that are part of the whole Welcome to Blumhouse collection that's going on Amazon.
Yeah.
Again, not super my genre, so I'm not all on top of this. But they laid out a convincing case that Blumhouse is not doing right by the women they are hiring to make these movies. And I hope that The Craft Legacy doesn't get lost in the shuffle, because I did really quite enjoy it.
You mentioning Lovie Simone made me remember that I needed to add Cela and the Spades to my list of things to catch up on.
Yes.
Before the year's over, because that's one of my goals of the year. Goals. Yeah. Go back and talk about the stuff that we missed earlier on in the year when everything was super chaotic. Gideon Adlon, mm-hmm. turns out, is in fact the daughter of Pamela Adlon.
That makes perfect sense.
Yes.
She has a similar comedic presence. And Zoe Luna, I should note, is a trans actress and playing a trans character.
Which is cool.
So if you were, looking for a magical franchise that acknowledges that trans women are women, here's a good place to start.
Yes. Next up.
Yes.
Something that's not good, right?
I don't know. What are we talking about?
Lupin the Three or...
Lupin the Third, the First.
Okay. Alonzo. Okay, Alonzo. I watched a little bit
Lupin the Third, the First?
Holidate.
Oh, Holiday.
And
yes.
I watched some chunks of Craft Legacy. Uh-huh. Again, you know, busy doing other things.
Yes.
But it's right there on the TV, so I'm not seeing it.
Right.
I didn't see a single moment of Lupin the Third until I did. And when I did, I said, what the hell is this ugly-looking thing? Go.
Yeah, okay. So Lupin the Third is a very popular, some might say iconic, character in Japanese pop culture. He is a master thief. He is the grandson of the legendary Arsène Lupin. And there have been a lot of different Lupin the Third manifestations over the years on TV and in film. A very early Hayao Miyazaki feature film, The Castle of Cagliostro, is a Lupin the Third adventure. That was my first exposure to the character. So now we have this new Lupin the Third movie. And first of all, the title makes no sense, because you think if they're going to call it Lupin the Third, the First, it's going to be like his first adventure. It's going to be the Batman Begins of Lupin the Third. No, it's just a new version of it, but it's, you know, you're thrown in media race as far as who these characters are and what's going on. Secondly, as you point out, it looks terrible.
Yeah.
It is CG animation of the type that looks like...
Food Fight.
It's not as bad as Food Fight.
It looks like Food Fight.
Food Fight is its own category of wretched. I would say that this movie looks like the kind of film where they were halfway through post-production and then somebody saw Shrek...
Right.
And realize, we gotta up our game here. There's new technology afoot.
Right.
So it feels about 20 years out of date in terms of how it looks. And then story-wise, it's just kind of whatever. It's a caper, you know. And people are running around wanting to get the thing. The MacGuffin in this case is something called the Bresson Diary.
Right.
Which... How dare you?
that was my line. Have you know.
Anyway, yeah, so it is very underwhelming. I don't know why Shout Factory picked it up and are making a big deal of releasing it in the U.S. I mean, I guess if you are like an anime completist or something, you really want to get your hands on it, or a Lupin completist. But boy, oh boy, this is a very not good-looking and otherwise... super average animated feature film. If you've never seen Castle of Cagliostro, I highly recommend it. But this is... no thanks.
Alonzo?
Dave?
Where can I find a spotlight on Toni Collette? I need one.
Funny you should ask. Our good friends at Film Movement Plus are celebrating her birthday, which was yesterday, November 1st.
Happy birthday, Toni Collette.
Yes. With a couple of films, Jasper Jones and Glassland, neither of which I know. I suspect they are both Australian films that didn't get big play in the
US. And neither of which are Dream Horse.
Look.
And I'm
2020 took a lot away from us.
Yeah.
And for you, I know the release of Dream Horse was high on the list.
I need it so badly.
Well,
when's it coming?
Maybe they're saying 2021 now.
When?
So yeah, so Film Movement Plus spotlighting Toni Collette and also presenting the final film from a director you love, Luchino Visconti.
Yes.
L'Innocente,
which I have not seen.
Starring Giancarlo Giannini, Laura Antonelli, who was the queen of Italian exported to the U.S. cinema in the 70s, and Jennifer O'Neill.
Yeah.
Summer of 42. What was the model show?
I don't know. What model show are you talking about?
She was on the show with John Eric Hexum, where they were like undercover spies, but she was a photographer and he was a...
I don't remember the name of it. I'm sorry.
Jennifer O'Neill, people. I can never see the words Laura Antonelli without thinking of... There's John Waters in one of his essays talks about like trailers for foreign films where they don't feature any dialogue from the movie so the people in the audience won't realize that it's not in English and they're going to have to go read subtitles. And instead, they're festooned with reviews like Rex Reed saying, I'm in love with Laura Antonelli.
I'm stoked about L'Innocente. That seems like something that during Thanksgiving week would be a nice...
there you go.
A nice thing to sit down with. Because... You know, his films tend to be sort of epic.
to say the least. Yes.
And we argue over Visconti semi-regularly in this house.
Yeah.
But as you know, this is a home of cinema.
It is.
So...
In this house, we believe in le cinema.
And we believe in arguing over Luchino Visconti. What's the...
Film...
What are the details?
Well, Film Movement Plus, I also want to throw in, they are still hosting the National Film Festival for Talented Youth, which is a collection of 17 short films from around the world. Again, all of this stuff, Toni Collette, the Visconti, the nifty shorts, all just part of a massive menu of foreign films, documentaries, feature films, shorts, lots more great stuff from the folks at Film Movement Plus. And because they are such swell folks and love you, the Linoleum Knife listeners, so much, get a 30-day free trial and 50% off your first 3 paid months. Use the promo code KNIFE, KNIFE, at checkout when you go to filmmovementplus.com.
You know what I like?
What do you like?
Noir. You know why I like it?
Bummerness?
Everyone is always unhappy. No one is happy. And you're guaranteed that they will stay unhappy at the end of the film. They start out unhappy. They end it unhappy. Even if things go right for them and the framed guy gets away, you know, and
clears his name.
Clears his name. You know, there is some kind of loss along the way.
Sure.
And so,
no matter what happens, they're still in black and white.
They're still living in shadow.
But they've got great hats.
Well, no one has on a hat in Damnation.
They do not.
They go out hatless and frequently umbrella-less, and that is the thing they should not be doing.
Big mistake, because it's almost never not raining in Damnation.
Damnation is a 1988 film. From Bélatar.
Yes.
Another favorite in this home.
Mm-hmm.
Director of Damnation.
Well, of course.
Sorry. Director of Satin Tango is what I meant to say. Director of...
The Turin Horst.
The Turin Horst, Werkmeister Harmonies, others.
Yes.
Family Nest, which was, I think, the first one that you saw.
It was, his first
and
film.
And it's his first film as well. Well, okay. So...
Because Satan Tango set the world on fire.
Earlier, in the career of Bélatar.
Yes.
He directed films like Family Nest, which were, you know, these very sort of claustrophobic, you know, domestic dramas about people, you know, who were unhappy.
Kind of neorealist.
Yeah. But along comes 1988 and Damnation, the very first of several films that he made in collaboration with the Hungarian novelist Laszlo Krasznahorkai, including Satan Tango.
Right.
But now we have a 4K restoration and re-release of this film. And as I said on KCRW when we were on last Friday, over the course of our 25-year-long relationship, you have referred to me as a miserabilist.
I will never top the friend that referred to you as a bedsit saddo.
The specific line from this late friend was a bedsit, and he used the same word as you, a bedsit miserabilist saddo.
Ah,
well, I'm not sad all the time. I'm sad a normal amount of times, like a person is sometimes sad.
Okay.
But you give me some film, music, or literature where everyone is unhappy, that's like a whole box of Dolly Madison zingers for me.
Strawberry.
But you are, as you said earlier, you are right. It always rains in Damnation. And then I mean always rains. It's about a man, and his name is Miklos Sekely, or Sekely. In a remote Hungarian mining town, he's obsessed with his married lover. She is played by Vali Karikis. And he arranges for her husband, played by Georgi Saralmi, to be the courier for an unspecified package. He gets a cut of the money involved.
But he gets out of town for a while.
That puts husband out of town so that the miserable man and the miserable woman can continue their love-hate affair.
Their miserable affair.
They do sex a lot, but they are not happy about it. They don't like each other.
They have sex more than they smile, let's put it that way. If you didn't want to invest the 7+ hours into Satan Tango,
this is a brisk 2-hour film.
Yes.
This is a
amuse-bouche.
This is a quick, this is quick work for Bélatar, even though it is slow cinema.
Yeah. If you want a taste of this.
It's no spoiler to say that this ends unhappily, because I've already talked about how nothing ends happily. If it were not, if it did end happily, it would not be a film by Bélatar.
No, it would not.
Anyway, it's not like there was a lot of sun in Satan Tango, but Damnation is the film where he sort of shifted into the style that would become Satan Tango.
Right.
And that style involves an all-enveloping atmosphere, you know. You could call it fog-like, but that would be a little on the nose for, you know, him, because it's relentless fog and pounding rain and breath that you can see even when the people are indoors. They're in this cruddy bar for half of the movie. The floor is constantly wet.
Some of the I know the whole. I could tell you twitching to want to like mop that floor.
Oh yeah, everyone clear. I'm going to mop it up. Then we're going to let it dry.
I've got a Swiffer.
Then you can begin.
Wipe your shoes.
Dancing to the
accordion.
Always happening accordion music that's going on.
Tar also has an aesthetic that Kaiju Cinema would call moving the camera is for wimps.
Although, he does move the camera.
He does move the camera. He doesn't cut.
He doesn't cut. One of my favorite shots in this film are just him moving the camera super slowly across the bar and then back across
far enough into the corner to see the one guy, to find out that the sad accordion music is indeed diegetic.
It is.
Someone
is
sitting there playing it.
Absolutely.
And then back. There's one sequence where it's the guys at the bar and they're talking about stuff and you hear the accordion and there's something making like a click sound, like a like they've got a clicker, like somebody's got an old remote control or something.
Oh, he loves amplified unusual sound design.
Yeah, and I don't know where it's coming from, and it there's more of it as it moves mm-hmm. along, and it was just like it was putting me on edge. I was like, oh, well played, Bela Tarr. You're making me crazy.
Now, here's the thing. We're fixing to talk about a movie called Madre, which is also an unhappy film. Mm. But it's unhappy in a different way, and we'll get to it when we get to it. Yeah. But Madre is a film that provokes anxiety. Mm. It made me upset while I watched it. Bela Tarr, this film particularly, I just sort of settled in for the gloom of it. These are troubled times. Maybe that's not what you're about.
Sure.
But
I think
for me,
go ahead.
This is a Valentine. This is a black-hearted Valentine for people who are of a mind to receive them.
There was something that I tweeted on or put it on Instagram a while ago,
yeah.
And it was rather bleak, and it was the idea of like, this current thing is worse than hell because hell has no choices.
Right.
Whereas like, and I think that Damnation is maybe an easier sit than Madre because Madre holds out moments of hope or possibility or,
right.
you know, potential.
Right.
And this movie is very clear from the get-go that that's not even on the menu.
Yeah. No, there's a character in this film. She is in the credits referred to strictly as coat check woman.
Oh boy.
And her entire function in this film is to show up unannounced for no apparent reason, just to say apocalyptic stuff from the Old Testament to the main guy.
Like even for this movie, she's a Debbie Downer.
Yeah. After the first time she showed up on camera, when she came along again, I thought, ooh.
What else you got?
Is it time for the Book of Lamentations? Like, what's going to happen? Every moment she's on screen, I'm like, yeah. Give me more.
Do your specialty number.
She's my favorite person in the whole movie. And just in general, I love his films. He has this just hypnotic brand of melancholy, and he has mastered it over the years.
Yeah.
It's so magnetic and so powerful, and it's so outside the realm of the everyday, so outside the realm of the kind of films he used to make, that you feel like you have traveled to a shadowy alien planet where everyone is, they look like a human being, but they just stare gloomily through you.
Mm.
Until you blink.
Right.
I love him so much, and it is a cheap $10 on filmlink.org. It's Film at Lincoln Center.
LINC.
Filmlinc.org. I heartily recommend this.
I'm glad that I watched Satan Tango first.
Yeah.
Because that's a movie that, again, if you aren't immediately on its wavelength, you will be by hour four or so.
Yeah.
And having had that experience, I went into this one knowing exactly what I was in for,
right.
and had a brain appropriately. And I really enjoyed it.
Yeah. He doesn't make films anymore. He may still surprise us.
Yeah. So Miyazaki keeps saying that too.
He says he's done. But boy.
And if we haven't mentioned it lately,
I love Satan what he's laying down.
Is on Criterion Channel.
Satan Tango is also on Criterion. If you're in the United States and you really want to escape the world for 7 hours over Thanksgiving weekend and, you know, not
election day,
not talk to your family, then, you got that to look forward to. Okay, let's talk about Madre, because
yes,
it's burning a hole in me.
Okay. Oh, Satin Tango, also on Canopy, by the way.
Oh, yeah. Okay, cool. Talk about Madre. It's a Spanish-French
yes, production.
Co-production. Yeah.
Oh, you want me to?
I want you to.
Oh, okay.
Do you need to pull up the information?
So Marta Nieto is the lead.
And Marta Nieto.
Yes.
It sounded like you were saying Martin.
No.
Yeah.
Okay. Marta Nieto. And she plays the titular character. She is, when we meet her, she's living in Madrid. She is divorced. Her husband is on vacation with their six-year-old son. And as she is getting ready to go out for the evening, she gets a phone call from the son, who is by himself on a beach somewhere in France. He doesn't know where the father is. He doesn't know where he is. He's alone and frightened, and the battery on the cell phone is dying, and there's somebody else there, and the phone dies.
I gotta say,
it is a harrowing 15-minute sequence that is basically this woman on the phone.
Do you know what other film begins with a woman on the phone for 15 minutes? The original 1979, When a Stranger Calls, and I had the same feelings watching this as I did the first time I saw When a Stranger Calls, because these phone calls become more and more terrifying when you hear what the kid is telling the mother
right,
about his circumstances and who's near him.
If you are a parent, maybe this is not the movie
maybe
for
skip
you
it.
Right now.
Maybe skip this one.
Maybe
right
after
now.
The kids go to college, you could watch this movie. But like I have been to certain movies with certain people who have children and scenes that were not nearly this traumatic were traumatizing.
Right.
So
yep.
You have a pass. I would totally get it because I was freaking out and I'm never having children. So that's the sort of prelude of the film.
Yeah, that's just like the first 15 minutes.
Yeah.
This is not...
That's not a spoiler.
The film is about what happens after that.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So we cut to 10 years later. The woman, Elena, is now living on a beach in France. She manages a seaside like bar and restaurant. And, you know... There are people in town who sort of know her backstory and kind of gossip about her. Oh, she's the crazy lady who lost her son.
Right.
You know, and of course they've managed to like stretch the story to where like she was there and let him go or something.
Right,
you know?
Right, right.
You know, she's in a relationship. They're planning to move in together. Like she externally it would appear to have like her life together. And then one day she sees a boy named Jean, played by Jules Poirier. And as the camera sort of focuses on like his brow line and his mouth and just different things about him. And she just sort of has this flash of like, this could be my kid. And so finds herself like following him home one day. And then he notices him follow her home. And so he comes and hangs out at the bar where she works. And they start to develop this friendship. And her boyfriend is wondering what's going on. His parents, his mother's played by Anne Consigny from A Christmas Tale.
Mm-hmm.
They would like to know what's going on. And as they grow closer with, as you said, the many conversations that aren't taking place.
Why won't people talk about what's actually going on? Why won't anyone just say, okay, well, so here's the thing. I think maybe your kid is my kid.
Yeah.
Could you maybe, you know... prove that he's your child.
Do you have a DNA test handy? You know.
Something, anything, any kind of conversation that would explain why, you know, you're a 35-year-old woman who is hanging out with the 16-year-old.
Yeah.
Now, you know, in France, it's apparently legally perfectly acceptable for these two people to develop any kind of relationship they see fit. But, you know, it would still unnerve the parents,
yeah.
I think. And so... that's what is happening. The parents are unnerved, and no one's really saying what's going on.
Yeah.
And then the relationship gets deeper and deeper and deeper and weirder in a vertigo kind of way.
Mm-hmm.
And as upset as it made me in the first 15 minutes, it made me that upset
again.
Again. Because it's like, I got, no, stop. Go away. Everyone just stop. Let's bring in a therapist and a notary public, perhaps, and let's have the conversation. I'm not going to spoil how it ends.
Yeah.
But I'll tell you, this movie provoked so much anxiety and panic and sorrow in me at various points in the film.
Yeah.
That, you know, you're talking to the screen.
Yeah, it's one of those no situations.
It's a good film.
Yes.
It's just tough.
Yeah. Martin Nieto's performance is extraordinary.
It's tougher, again, than Damnation. Damnation is just this gloom fest.
Yeah.
This is an anxiety-provoking film.
Yeah.
These
characters are not damned the way that that Tars are at the beginning, anyway.
Right. Now, I have one complaint.
Uh-huh.
Other than the fact that no one is saying the thing
right.
that they need to say. But that's not really a complaint because the script is doing that intentionally.
Sure.
To ramp up everyone's ambiguity and questioning all of their motives.
It's not just one of those movies where, like, have the 5-minute conversation. There's no movie.
It knows it's not having the conversation.
Exactly. Okay. Yes.
Here's the thing. As we've discussed many times on this show, There was a period of my childhood for 4 years where I was involuntarily separated from my mother.
Mm.
Do you know what I didn't forget? What she looked like. This was before the internet, right. by the way. So it wasn't like I had, you know, a Facebook page I could go to and, sure. and talk to her. I didn't forget what she looked like.
Well, you weren't six either.
I was 9. Mm. Is that big a difference?
I
don't know. Is it?
I think it might be.
Well, when I got to see my mother again, I knew who she was. Spotted her right away in the crowd. Like, I knew that was my mother. I just have this feeling like between 6 and 16, you would probably still retain a memory of your mother's face. Because it's not like you're 3, mm-hmm. where you just don't remember things and everything's sure. fuzzy. You have vivid memories from being 6 years old.
Yeah.
Right? And so, you know, and you know her name.
Yeah.
And it would occur to you to be like, oh, my mother was named that. I remember being on this beach and being whisked away by who knows who.
Right.
And now I'm here with these people who, you know. I feel like he would have recognized her.
Yeah. This would make an interesting double feature with, you remember?
Instead of hitting on her right away.
Yeah. Is it Europa? The Agnieszka Holland movie from the 90s.
That is the name of an Agnieszka Holland movie.
About somebody whose child goes missing and then the kid shows
yes,
up a while later and they can't, yes. they're not quite sure if it's him or not.
No, no. Europa is the World War II
movie. Oh, right.
Movie.
No,
it's Olivier.
Thank
Agnieszka
you.
Holland went and made 2 films in a row.
Yes. With repetitive titles.
With a word, comma, repeat word yeah. title.
Olivier.
Has anyone else in cinema done that?
Not that I can think of.
But yeah, that was the plot of Olivier.
So here's my big question. Are we talking about City Hall this week or are we talking about City Hall next week?
Why wouldn't we?
Okay, just wondering.
Do we want to save it for next week?
Well, we're at 53 minutes.
Yes, and we have Donut King to talk about.
We have Donut King and we have Letters.
Oh, so we have 9 movies to talk about.
Yeah.
Okay.
We could save City Hall for next week.
Why don't we save City Hall for next week? I've already promoted the Everyone Should Watch It on Instagram. And we'll know something about an election by...
Indeed.
Well, we might know something about an election by next week.
I review for the
wrap. Which would sort of... inform the conversation.
Sure. And we can talk about it for our 10th anniversary episode.
Yeah. Do we think we can make our special guest watch it?
Oh, that'd be the best. But, you know, it's a commitment, so we'll see.
It is. It is a 4.5-hour film.
Yeah.
But, yeah. Hey, you guys, you want to do some homework for next episode? Yeah. Watch City Hall.
There you go.
It's so good. Mm-hmm. It's a new documentary from Frederick Wiseman. We will talk about it next week.
Yes.
But for now, we're going to talk about Donut King.
Yes.
It's a new film from Alice Gu. You could make any sort of movie about donuts and have me as a viewer. I mean, honestly, before the virus, donuts were such a regular part of my life. And now they haven't been a part of my life for 8 months.
Yeah.
Because of, you know, circumstances that you know, the cheapness of them. You, like, you would spend to have any delivered, it would cost you the same amount of money that you would buy the donuts for.
Right.
It's just a, yeah, and so we just haven't done it.
I mean, we could walk to our neighborhood donut shop.
No, we can't.
No, let me finish.
All
we
right.
We can walk there. We can't go into it because there's only one mode of ingress and egress, and it's very close.
I've scanned the place, and I love this donut shop.
Yeah.
But there's only one door in. It's a tiny little space inside. They're not limiting who goes in.
Mm.
They're not doing a curbside situation. You just have to go in
yeah.
and do it. You can't be you can't be distant from anyone in the shop, not the employees, not the other customers. I won't go in there.
Mm.
And it makes me sad.
What if you went at like 5 a.m.? When do they open?
I would still have to be near the employees.
Oh, there is
the people running
you're
the
right,
place.
You're right,
you are not far enough. There's no physical way for you to
be
six
feet
away from
in
the,
that place.
Yeah.
It's so small. Yeah, you're right.
So, I'm sorry.
Oh, well.
Neighborhood donut shop that I love.
Yes.
But I'm not there. Donut King, however.
Yes.
Not only did it make me try to figure out new ways to get donuts.
Mm-hmm.
But boy, I really love this movie.
It is it you know, as you said, there are a lot of different ways you could make a documentary about donuts. And this one is so it's such a great LA story
mm-hmm.
and such a great sort of like, you know, triumph of the refugee story.
Yep.
Like there's a lot they've really hit on a really great yarn here.
As I said on KCRW last Friday, we really love our donuts in Los Angeles. There mm-hmm. is one donut shop for every 7,000 people
yeah.
in Los Angeles.
As opposed to?
The national average, which is one donut shop for every 30,000 people.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what that says about Los Angeles.
We spend a lot of time in the car.
We do. And you can eat them in the car so
yep.
quickly and so wonderfully. And they don't get all over you. And
yeah.
Yeah. Ted Noy was a Cambodian refugee. He arrived in Southern California in the mid-1970s. He needed to work to support his family, so he got a job at Winchell's Donuts.
Oh, well, no. First, he was at a gas station.
And I understand.
He smelled
but
donuts.
I'm skipping ahead to the main event.
Okay.
Okay.
It's a part I like.
All right. he learned how to run the place from the stem to stern.
Yeah.
And he saved every penny and wound up with his own shop. He learned what he needed to learn from Winchell's, and he went off and did his own thing
mm-hmm.
in direct competition to Winchell's. And over time, he built up an empire of donut shops called Christie's Donuts,
yeah.
named after his wife. And they, as a huge connected, you know, interconnected
network
of independently run shops. They held Dunkin' Donuts at bay
yeah.
from coming into Southern California or anywhere in California. And they successfully competed with Winchell's so well that Winchell's eventually, like, their number of stores dwindled. Yeah. There's one, this is my favorite. There's a really wonderful donut shop on Santa Monica Boulevard as you're heading east. That used to be a Winchell's,
mm-hmm.
and they barely changed anything
oh,
about
right.
it, and now it's called Michelle's. And every time I drive past it, I just think, that's right, Michelle's.
That's like in Dallas, that old Hilton Inn that they turned into the Hilltop, H-I-L-T-O-P.
Yeah. Yeah. I love it when that happens.
Oh, or the gas station on Sunset Boulevard that's an Exico.
Yeah. So anyway,
and they were able to keep their shops open cheaper than Winchell's because you had these families that were running them and doing
families.
The work, and it was and so they had a smaller like nuts basically
cleverly
and,
skirting child labor laws
well, exactly.
every day of
and,
the year.
And what Ted was doing was sponsoring all of these other families of Cambodian refugees,
yes.
giving them their own shop to run,
right.
and then. So he basically was a pipeline for people to get the hell out of the refugee camps, out of the UN camps, yep. And settle in Southern California to become entrepreneurs themselves, to be successful,
yep.
And to, you know, like raise their families with this business and have the families work at the business.
Something like over 90% of the donut shops in California are run by Cambodian people.
Yeah.
Yeah. So he became known as Uncle Ted.
Yes.
And he became a billionaire.
He's the reason that donut boxes are pink.
Oh, yeah. Like, he's not just the reason donut boxes are pink. He's the reason why, you know, Cambodian people have built this solid base of cultural input
right.
in California. You know, any anti-immigrant a-hole that you know...
Should see this movie.
Should see this movie and be ashamed
enjoy,
of...
And enjoy it.
Be ashamed of themselves, honestly, because yes. what this film demonstrates, which is one way that it demonstrates the fact that immigration helps the United States to thrive and be better rather than the other way around.
And it also hits on a thing that I really responded to as... a child of immigrants myself, and it yeah. drives me crazy when I see, like, in narrative films where they get this wrong. Like, you know, immigrant communities are just that. They are communities. They
right.
bind each other. You know, like, it was not Tiger Land. What was it? Was it Tiger Tale, that Netflix movie from this year about the Taiwanese couple that immigrates to the United States, and then about the guy's relationship with his adult children later on. There's the scene where, you know, the wife is in the laundromat and, you know, she speaks no English and she hears one other woman speaking her language and, like, immediately
right.
like, they become friends. You know, and so this notion of, like, we're looking out for each other, we're looking out for our own, we're helping each other out. Like, you know, my parents were very involved in this group in Atlanta that was all, like, doctors who spoke Spanish, basically,
yeah.
you know,
yeah.
and those were the people they socialized with, and we knew their kids, whether or not they went to our school or our church or whatever. And you know, so often in these movies, they'll create these immigrant characters and just plop them somewhere where they don't have any kind of support group. And
right.
it's like, that's not how it ever works.
Right.
You find where those folks are, or you go move where those folks are,
right.
because you need those people around you to, you know, for networking, for, you know, the right grocery store, whatever.
Right.
You know?
Now, this documentary is also about what happens when you become too rich.
Well, there's that.
And when you begin to...
there's a fall.
Believe your own hype. And Mr. Noy had some problems.
Yes.
And, again, I won't spoil it, but he... There's a reckoning for some habits that he develops.
Yes.
And it's, you know, it's kind of sad, but not, it is not an unhappy ending.
No.
It's just a lovely movie. And it's a very special story. And it just, if you need something to make you feel good.
Yeah. But the thing about it, though, is that even though he has his own problems and that, you know, creates a problem with the business.
Right.
The movie also sort of demonstrates how this is such a generational phenomenon that
right.
there's no way that it can continue, because again, you had all the reason they were able to run these businesses, you know, at the profit margin they were, is because you had the whole family at work. But because these are families that came to America and sent their kids to school and to college and to grad school or whatever.
And those kids
don't necessarily
had other career plans. They themselves wind up not having as many children.
Exactly.
And they are just simply maybe not interested in running the donut shop.
Yeah.
Now, we see in the film that some of them are,
yeah.
And how, like, the next generation is rebranding shops and making things new.
Coming up with new ways.
New ideas, new ways of doing business. And that's fascinating as well.
Absolutely.
So I dig this movie so much.
Yeah. Check it out.
And you have seen Over the Moon.
Yeah. Another disappointing animated film.
Quickly.
It's directed by the guy who won an Oscar with Kobe Bryant.
Okay.
Did you see that short Dear Basketball?
I don't know that I did.
Anyway, he's like a Pixar veteran. This is his first time directing. And it is set in China, and it is about a young girl whose mother dies, and her father is clearly on the verge of remarrying, and the daughter is not down with this, and she wants to prove that this myth that the mother always told her about the woman in the moon and how, you know, the man she loved back on Earth is true. So she, you know, builds a rocket to go to the moon to find this, like, moon goddess. And succeeds, and then other things happen. And the first 20 minutes or so, I was really charmed by this film. It felt really unique. I loved the very specific sort of Chinese-ness about it. Like, not just in the sort of the myths that the mother is sharing, but the family owns a bakery, and they make these mooncakes for the moon festival. And Netflix was nice enough to send us a bunch of mooncakes because we'd never had them before. And
they were delicious. Yeah.
And they're gorgeous in this movie. Like, I'm a fan of food and animation when they really know how to make it look like so delicious, like the feast that the parents eat in Spirited Away that turns them into pigs,
right?
Or that potato chip fried rice they do in Weathering With You, you know, a Miyazaki rice ball, like, it's just a thing of beauty,
right?
So all that stuff was really great. The mooncakes were really delicious looking. I was totally down for this movie. Once the kid and the other kid get to the moon, it turns into, like, You can almost sense the studio notes of, like, well, if it were a Disney movie, she would have the big I Want song here, so let's give her that. And if it were a Pixar movie, well, you know, this person who's supposed to be a role model and a hero, once they meet them, they find out that they're really not all that and are actually maybe kind of corrupt. And if this were an Illumination movie, there would be wacky minions running around doing wacky things.
Right.
All of that happens.
Right.
And it becomes a lot less interesting. And this movie kind of lost me. And then again, until about the last 10 minutes or so, once they're off the moon again, it sort of reestablished itself as something that was kind of interesting. But that middle is just a lot to endure. And it's sad because, again, like, I like the fact that it's... I love when kid movies are girl-centric. And the hero of this film does for science what Belle in Beauty and the Beast does for reading.
Okay.
Like, she literally, you know, figures out all of the physics and all of the everything to make this rocket to the moon happen. You know, there's a really great voice cast, people like, you know, John Cho, and, you know, he's a doctor, Ken Jeong.
He's a doctor. What, in real life or
sounds
on TV?
Like.
In the movie? What?
Okay. No, in real life.
All right.
Yeah, anyway, so this movie has a lot going for it, but it left me kind of cold.
All right.
Yeah.
Got letters.
We do.
This is from Kyle. Dave and Alonzo, longtime listener, first-time caller. Growing up closeted, precocious, and painfully shy, I found solace as a kid by immersing myself in films. When my parents gave my brother and me a computer with internet access in fifth grade, my first act was typing movies into the Google search bar.
Mm-hmm.
Dave, you can probably guess where this is going. Up came movies.com, and up came your reviews. I remember falling in love immediately with your irreverent and hilarious writing. Oh, Kyle. Thank you. Okay. I'm not... Listen, I'm going to take the compliment. I'm not going to tell you you're wrong. Okay. Your time at movies.com might not be your fondest memory. It's not. But you made an impression on me. In fact, you were my first real gateway into film criticism, and I look forward to coming home from school every Friday so I could read your reviews. Years later, your name popped into my head, and on a whim, I searched for you on Apple Podcasts. I was delighted to find Linoleum Knife, and I've been a listener ever since. Now I am an out and proud young adult. Congratulations, Kyle.
Nice.
Good, 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 good. And I can have trouble connecting with fellow gays my age on matters of culture. When I arrived at college, I was surprised to find no one else had read Valley of the Dolls.
What?
Or seen I Could Go On Singing.
Jenny.
Don't get me wrong. I love my friends deeply, and we connect in many other ways. But getting to listen in on conversations between two knowledgeable and witty gay elders. That's what we are.
I'll take it.
Well, that's what we are. Elders. Thoughtful opinions and vast cultural knowledge fills that void for me. Thank you, David Alonzo, for enlightening me on the magic of Angie Baby. She definitely killed him. and filling my watch list with beautiful and challenging recommendations. You two are a bright spot in abysmal times, and you make excellent company while unwinding after a long day. If you would so kindly indulge me, I could not end this letter without leaving a list of films for you to knife and fork. Meet me in St. Louis.
Oh, love it.
Thumb up. Clute.
Love it.
Yes. The Women. Yes. Love
it. As long as we're talking about the 1939 and not the Meg Ryan.
Is anyone talking about the Meg Ryan one?
I just want to be clear.
Anybody,
about this.
Does anyone ever talk about the Meg Ryan one?
Not if they can help it.
Black Narcissus.
Yes.
Daughters of the Dust.
Mm.
The Devil's Rejects.
Haven't seen it.
I love The Devil's Rejects.
Okay.
It's anyway. The First Wives Club.
Sure.
It's fine. I was not a fan, yeah. But it's fine. Opening Night.
Ooh.
My Own Private Idaho.
Yeah.
House of the Devil.
Oh, fun.
Kyle.
You are 100% knife.
You're 100% knife.
You know who's in Opening Night besides Joan Blondell and Jenna Rollins?
Tell me.
Zora Lampert.
Oh, well, we just talked about Let's Scare Jessica to Death.
We did on our Patreon.
Patreon.com/linoleum. Let me do that right now.
Okay.
I'm going to talk about Patreon right now.
Okay.
Patreon.com/linoleumknife. You go there. You pick a level to subscribe. You get things. You get content. You get things. It's all explained on there. And we are recording podcasts basically 5 days a week for Patreon.
Yeah.
So if you like this and you want more,
there's more. Where this came from.
We're selling it if you're buying it.
There you go.
Yeah.
Well said.
Lucas. Lucas here again. After about a year between my first and second email, I'm surprised at writing again in less than a month, but something that was mentioned in episode 503 keeps coming back to me, so I figured I might as well write the actual email. You guys got an email talking about straight actors playing gay roles, which brought up the difference between that and cis actors playing trans roles. While you mentioned a lot of good points, there is one main issue I see with casting cis people for trans roles that I thought maybe I should bring up. There may be an exception to this, I can't remember, but whenever a cis person is cast for a trans role, it's not a cis man playing a trans man, but a cis man playing a trans woman, or a cis woman playing a trans man. Mm. This casting choice, then, doesn't only lock out trans actors from one of the few opportunities they have to gain notoriety, but also erases the character's gender. As much as the media may supposedly talk about a trans experience, this casting, in the end, signals that the person says they are a certain gender, but in the end what they are is their biological sex, and it can thus be easily played by anyone of the same biological sex, regardless of gender identity.
Good point.
Yes, we agree.
The only exception I can think of is Helen Shaver played a trans woman on this dramatic series that starred Richard Dreyfuss. That didn't last very long. That aired in the 2000s.
Oh, I don't know this.
They were both like college professors.
Okay.
Can't remember what it was called, but that's one of the few times, and I'm sure there are other examples, and if anyone wants to write in to suggest them, please do, but where a cis woman plays a trans woman.
Oh, okay.
The Education of Max Bickford.
I have no idea what that was.
Didn't last.
Okay. Tony. Tony in Boston says, hello, gentlemen. Loved hearing your first-time stories about the boys in the band. He means...
The 1970.
The old one. Wanted to share mine. I'm the same age as Alonzo, I think, born in 1967.
Yep.
And grew up in Massachusetts. We were closer to Providence, Rhode Island than to Boston. But we were able to watch TV channels from both cities. In the early 80s, I saw TV ads promoting Channel 38's The Movie Loft airing of The Boys in the Band, and I think, which I think came with content warnings. Channel 38 was a Boston UHF channel, and The Movie Loft was a respected show that aired unedited films.
Hmm.
The show was also memorable for its loft set, which featured a brick wall and a spiral staircase, and for its host, Dana Hersey, a charming broadcaster with a deep voice, and who looked like a handsomer and butcher Robert Wagner.
Well,
anyway, I was about 13 or 14 years old, certainly not out to anybody, and just barely starting to realize that I would need to deal with this gay thing I had been avoiding. I decided I needed to watch that airing of The Boys in the Band. Luckily, my parents and brother both weirdly planned to be out that night. I started watching, but with the television turned down as low as possible, so I could hear when the car came into the driveway.
I feel ya.
I was enthralled and didn't really take in how negative this portrayal was. For me, it was a glimpse of what was possible, that I could eventually live in a world and go to a party with other men like me. Somehow, the sniping and the self-loathing didn't register with me. Just the promise of a future.
Mmm, cracked crab sounds delicious.
Anyway, I had watched most of the film before I heard the car turn into our driveway, at which point I changed the channel and turned up the volume, so I missed the ending.
Oh.
I watched the film next about 10 years later with gay friends, and we fully recognized the self-loathing of the characters at that time. We didn't appreciate what the film was doing in terms of representation or how it documented a particular time. I get it now, of course. Thank you for letting me share. Stay safe. Tony in Boston.
Thank you, sir.
We're done.
We're done.
That's the end.
All right.
Well, end of podcast.
Thanks, everybody, for listening. Do please check out... like I said, my other shows, Breakfast All Day, Who Shot Ya, A Film and a Movie, and, you know, give a listen to some of our many friends out there in the podcast universe. See what Bibbs and Whitney are up to over at the Critically Acclaimed Network. Listen to Dennis Anyone with Dennis Hensley, The Comics Canon, Sewers of Paris, All Things Cozy, Deck the Hallmark, Big Fat Gay Podcast, Fat Guys of the Movies, Criterion Cast, and Secretly Timid. You can subscribe to this show for free at Apple Podcasts and leave us a 5-star review. We will read it on the show. It does help people find the program. You can also leave us positive feedback in the many places that we stream, like Spotify and Google Play, Amazon Music, Stitcher Radio, TheLounge.com, CastBox, Podbean. You can follow us on the socials at Linoleum Cast
and the socials. All right.
Thank you, Blue, for our theme music. See what he's up to over on Twitter at Blutopia, BLEUTOPIA, and drop us a line at linoleumpodcast@gmail.com. Next week, with any luck, it's going to be our official 10th anniversary episode.
Wow,
which is flabbergasting because we still really don't know what we're doing. Anyway,
speak for yourself.
Thank you so much.
I'm a professional podcaster now.
You are.
Yeah.
You are.
Yeah.
We'll catch you guys next time. Until then.
Goodbye.